Let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Graybar Sports Open Line on this Wednesday evening. Nate Gatter with you in for Matt Pauly. Matt will be back on Friday when the Major League All-Star break concludes and the Cardinals resume their season against the Arizona Diamondbacks in Phoenix. Late first pitch will be an 8:40 first pitch Central Time. Between the Cardinals and the D-backs on Friday. Road trip for St. Louis out of the All-Star break. Brendan Donovan had a couple of hits. The lone Cardinals All-Star representative down in Atlanta last night, a game that ended in a swing-off. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. We have lots of guests to come. First up will be Daniel Estevi. He'll join us in about 10 minutes. Daniel, you might remember from his time here in St. Louis for a few years reporting at Fox 2, where he covered St. Louis City as well as, I think, any television reporter in the city for my money. And he is now back in Dallas, his hometown, at CW33 there in Dallas. And City and FC Dallas play each other on Saturday, so a perfect reason to check in with Daniel and preview that match a little bit, with St. Louis City coming off a 2-1 victory over Portland on Sunday at Energizer Park. 6:35, we'll visit with Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Just talk generally about where the Cardinals are right now and, of course, look ahead toward the deadline now a couple of weeks away and what the Cardinals' plans might be, what he's hearing. Also, I think we might touch base with him on an article that he wrote and something that's been getting more coverage in the last couple of days, which is kind of the increasing temperature already between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. The CBA comes, the collective bargaining agreement comes to an end at the end of next season. I think a lot of folks around the industry feel that a strike is a very real possibility, at the very least, a significant strife. I guess I shouldn't use strife and strike that close to each other to mean two different things, but that there's going to be some friction, shall we say. There already is, and that friction is likely to create real problems between Major League Baseball and the Players Association over the next year and a half, and that could be problematic then for what the 2027 season looks like. That's probably a complicating factor in the television deal negotiations that Major League Baseball is still trying to wrap up right now to square away how ESPN's television rights for the next 3 years, 26, 27, and 28, are going to shake out, because ESPN and MLB mutually opted out of that, which was silly of Major League Baseball to do, but ESPN was probably going to opt out anyway, so it really doesn't matter. And they now need television rights for their prime properties, at least their prime regular season properties, for the remainder of the existing deals, and they don't want to commit to anything beyond 2028 because that's when everything else comes up, and they want to be able to sell all the television rights together going into 2029. So that's probably complicated further by the possibility, at least, of a strike that could affect the 27 season. We'll talk to Derek about maybe not so much the television element of it, but we'll also touch on the labor dispute that is looming between Major League Baseball and the Players Union. Talk about the Cardinals, as we just did for a while on Redbird Rush Hour with Kevin Wheeler. You can go back and hear that on the free Odyssey app in podcast form. Some good discussion there about where the Cardinals are right now, the transition happening between the symbolic first and second halves of the season, either side of the All-Star break, the transition from pre to post trade deadline, which is going to be the most significant pole, if you will, marking stick of the Cardinals season. And then the transition that's happening on an overarching level between John Mozeliak and Chaim Bloom running baseball operations for the Cardinals, which is probably, when we look back on this season, and certainly when we look ahead at the next 12 months or so, going to be the biggest piece of the Cardinals' narrative. That's going to be the biggest thing for this offseason, is how does it differ with Chaim Bloom in charge? And it might be quite significant. I think it probably is likely that the ripples of that will be felt throughout the offseason and will be a primary talking point this winter for the Cardinals. We'll visit with Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com during the second hour. Jonathan is one of the two people, along with Jim Callis, who primarily cover the MLB draft for MLB.com. We will discuss the Cardinals draft class, also a little bit of the draft in bigger picture. 7:30, we'll visit for the first time of two in the next 2 days with Dan Reardon, KMOX golf analyst, talking about the Open Championship, which will get underway just after midnight this evening, local time. It'll be Thursday in Northern Ireland at Royal Portrush, where the first round will get underway. Dan will be back with us again tomorrow evening as well to analyze and break down the first 18 holes of the 72 at the Open Championship for the Claret Jug, golf's oldest trophy. And at the end of the show, we will talk to Ed Wheatley, who is president of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society, kind of an interesting benchmark as well in St. Louis Browns history over the last couple weeks that occurred, and we will talk to Ed all about that. So, as you can tell, it's going to be a busy couple of hours. So glad that you're with us on 104.1 FM, on any of our streams across Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, or on the free Odyssey app where you can listen live to everything that we do on KMOX. You can listen to Cardinals baseball, to St. Louis City soccer, all of that. If you want to join the conversation, there are so many ways to do it. The first is on that free Odyssey app. You can tap the talk back feature and leave us a voice message that we can play on the air. You can comment on the streams on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You can send us a tweet at KMOX Sports. You can call us at 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900. John Camp is standing by, the producer in our downtown studios, to take your calls, and he is newly qualified to do that. He's allowed to do it on his own now because he turned 25 yesterday. He used to have someone help him answer the phone, but now he's allowed to do it all on his own like a big boy. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. It's absolutely right.
That is what I heard. That's the biggest. You can rent a car and answer the studio phone on your own. So yep. Very, very exciting. Was it a good birthday, John?
It was. You know, we had a good time with the family. It's about all I really hope for 25. I don't really have any really big ones to look forward to other than 30. So
yeah, that's how you can tell you're starting to get old, that you're like, that's the best I could hope for.
I know next year I have to find everything, you know, like insurance plans. Yep. And yeah, it's time to really grow up and be an adult.
So if that doesn't get you excited for Gray Bar Sports Open Line, I don't know what will. John will be here. I will be here. Hopefully you will be here as well. Daniel Esteve will be here on the other side of the break. St. Louis City Talk coming up next. Just getting underway. Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Gray Bar Sports Open Line continues. Daniel Esteve is on the phone with us. Daniel, you know from his time in St. Louis reporting at Fox 2, he is now back in Dallas at CW33, which is sad for us, but convenient this week because City go down to Dallas to play FC Dallas on Saturday. So Daniel is the perfect guy. Daniel, we are so glad to have you. How you doing?
Nate, I'm smiling ear to ear, man, just to be chatting with you specifically and obviously back with the great people in St. Louis. To say, though, that I'm the perfect guy has and always will be quite the stretch, but I'm excited nonetheless to chat to you.
So obviously there's some positivity for St. Louis City and the scale of, you know, this season. You have to take the rays of hope where they come. And two goals in the second half for Marcel Hartl to come from behind and beat Portland certainly counts as a ray of hope. There was 53% possession. City completed more passes than Portland. They outshot them by quite a bit. Just in general, not a City-looking box score. And now they get, as road games go, a winnable game on paper against an FC Dallas team that has struggled quite a bit. Stylistically, with City transitioning a little bit now and trying to come out of the ice age of the Olaf Melberg era, how do you see this matchup playing out in terms of just the tactics on Saturday?
Hopefully better than just your average pillow fight, because a couple months back, you honestly could have looked at these two teams and said, man, they're very, very similar. Mild expectations on both ends, both kind of floating around playoff spots, but underwhelming for the better part of the season. Now, obviously, St. Louis City, which I can proudly say I can just watch from afar as a fan now, which is such a great experience for me, having covered the team for so long since its inception. You and I both, for that matter. I mean, City probably had The extra antics that have come with this season, new coaches, change, issues with the ownership, player issues. FC Dallas hasn't quite had that much, but at least with the on-field expectations, very, very similar. I think City-wise, Yes, they are trying to play a bit more forward pressing, a bit more attacking, but that's always been the mantra for Eric Quill here at FC Dallas. He's new. He came over from New Mexico United, and his MO is very direct. He said if he can score goals, he told me this before the season, with as few passes as possible, that would be a best case scenario. Now, the only problem with that is his very best player, Lucho Acosta, is great on the ball and is great at working in passes. So there's almost been a conflict of interest in that regard. So I anticipate two very confused styles of play come Saturday, and to see who's going to win will be probably the most interesting part of this matchup.
Yeah, something tells me Lucho Acosta did not hear let's press, win the ball and fire away and smile ear to ear.
Not quite. You talk about the bleak positivity. I go back to the FC Dallas's matchup against Cincinnati earlier this year. Just an absolute slugfest. I think over six goals in that matchup on the road. And it was really the only, I don't even think the result was very good. This was a couple months back. It was more so just the fight, the ability to come back, because it looked so bleak from an FC Dallas perspective, as if there was already no hope. But at least it pumped a little bit of life into this team that at the time was still very much hovering around that 10th, 11th spot in the West. But it's just been such a confusing season, certainly something that I think a lot of St. Louis City fans feel as well.
Yeah, that game was kind of a mess, that the Lucho Acosta return to Cincinnati, and how I think he was treated very differently than he anticipated he would be, and just it felt very, very messy. And that's going to be interesting. Speaking of you and I having covered St. Louis City since its inception, I don't know that we've really had that yet, where certainly we haven't had a player return and get any animosity from the crowd in that way. And I honestly, I'm not sure the levels of intensity around the fans feeling towards City right now are high enough that they could muster up a whole lot of animosity, but at some point it's going to happen. And it would be really interesting to experience Energizer Park when it's kind of out for blood like that. As outside of maybe the Kansas City matches in the first year, which were pretty emotionally charged, there haven't been a lot of those really high temperature kind of games.
You haven't really needed it, so to speak. And I can think of maybe a handful of games where maybe the St. Louis Blues fans have gotten pretty aggressive. I mean, heck, even to Jordan Kyrou at one point, shortly after Craig Berube walked out the door. But I can think of that first playoff series, I want to say 2021, when he had that issue with the Minnesota Wild. Yeah. There was some animosity toward the Wild bench. That's the only time I can really think of St. Louis fans getting too aggressive. And I always go back to one.
Nazem Kadri, too, and that didn't work out too well for the Blues.
I remember that one vividly, exactly. And I can think about a very direct quote. Monty, the big lefty, when he came over to St. Louis, our first interview with him in the Cardinals clubhouse after having played for the New York Yankees, he said, "Well, man, you guys are a lot easier to deal with than the New York media." And I imagine the same can be said for the fans. St. Louis fans are great, great fans, but Energizer Park in particular, I can't imagine ever being this absolutely hellacious place to play, not from an energy standpoint. It's always had that, but just from an animosity perspective. I think visiting players, in fact, they love playing in there because it's just good energy all around, which is a credit to the fans, but also, yeah, to your specific question, tough to imagine us really berating a couple new players as they make their return, especially a guy like, yeah, I think Indy Vasilev, if he ever makes his return to Energizer Park, that's somebody that I'm sure will love to celebrate because of his antics on and off the field. Just a great player.
Yeah, no, certainly there have been some of those guys who have been, if anything, sad departures. You know, I think the same thing with returns for guys like Tim Parker, even someone, you know. There have been a couple other guys, you know, maybe some that are kind of neutral departures, but
absolutely.
I don't think there's anybody who would inspire any sort of negative feelings in that way. And, you know, some of it is also just about, it's not that Cincinnati fans dislike Lucho Acosta in any way. Some of it is about, you know, spurned lover kind of situation. It's about how the departure happens rather than anything that happened during the tenure. And that's just, you know, you can't predict those things until the very end. In the spirit of Saturday's game, is there anybody aside from Acosta, maybe not such a big name, who you've had your eye on, who you think City fans should look out for in FC Dallas colors?
To be honest, I don't think there's anybody in particular that St. Louis City needs to be worried about. I mean, Nusep at the top is obviously a fantastic forward, and he's going to be on the end of a lot of those Lucho Acosta passes. So just that attack is always great. Just a player I'd love to see play, to be honest, in this matchup is Nolan Norris. He's been dealing with a lot of injuries lately, but he's a young 20-year-old, 20-plus-year-old youth U.S. international player who's just absolutely fantastic, kind of a Swiss Army knife, can play on the left side in a left back position, can play as a center back, can play as a central defensive midfielder. I think he's going to be so, so difficult to deal with for Major League Soccer teams moving forward. But he's just somebody that, oddly enough, we talk about animosity, Nate. He threw us a little bit of shade. And by us, I mean you and me, having called some of the City 2 games during that first season. Well, it turns out that semifinal, the following year that MLS Next Pro for St. Louis City lost to North Texas, when we thought they were going to return to the MLS Next Pro Championship, Nolan Norris was on that team, and it was a 3-0 victory in favor of North Texas. He was throwing some shade to City 2 at the time, thinking that for them, that was their MLS Next Pro Championship because they had so much respect for City 2. So, no, Nolan Norris is just a player who's in the top of my mind. I don't anticipate he'll play this weekend with his injury, but he's somebody to watch out for the future.
Do you know if you're going to get a chance to chat with any of the City guys who you have relationships with from when you were here?
I hope so. I've already spoken to a couple of the PR folks at St. Louis City. I know Cashon Smith won't be making the trip, but a couple of his colleagues and friends will be. So I'm already planning on meeting them. And then I'll try to see if I can, you know, sneak a conversation in, at least on the player side, with some of the players that I developed relationships with. I don't know if he's going to be there just because I'm a little bit removed, but any excuse to talk to John Hackworth, I will take. So I hope he's there. So plenty of people that I miss dearly. I'm hoping to actually get back to St. Louis sometime next month. So I'm planning on visiting as many people as possible, you included, Nate.
Yeah, well, we look forward to that. And certainly, yeah, any chance to talk to Hack is one worth taking. This has nothing to do with St. Louis City, you know, and I'm sure your sources are in so deep that you just can't reveal anything. But while we have you here, the rumors are swirling around your Dallas Mavericks down there, around what they might do in the trade market, including names such as one LeBron James floating around. Are you thinking that the Mavs are primed to make a little more noise, even after maybe the last Nico Harrison blockbuster didn't go over so well?
You know, it's ironic because I was at Cooper Flagg's introductory press conference. I was at the post-draft press conference, and it seems like everything Nico Harrison has said, as crazy as some of the stuff he said is to date, they have come true. More specifically, the deal for D'Angelo Russell. He was very adamant that they were going to go get a point guard, somebody who could also play off the ball and be a scoring threat once Kyrie Irving returns. And lo and behold, first day of free agency, D'Angelo Russell is signed. Now, there were a couple other names thrown around there, but to our knowledge, LeBron James has not been one of those names that has been mentioned. And I just imagine that from an asset perspective, who are you going to throw that way, right?
Right.
I mean, from the question's been thrown around to Nico Harrison so often is he's talked about win-now mentality. Yes, LeBron James would 100% fit that mantra, but in the same vein, he now has a Cooper Flagg. So how much do you blow up the ship in an effort to win a championship as quickly as possible? And who do you give up in that same regard? PJ Washington was probably the top candidate to be sent the other way in any trade scenario. Giannis was one that was thrown around quite a bit. But three times in his post-draft press conference, Nico Harrison specifically mentioned asking PJ Washington about playing with Cooper Flagg, somebody who we identified as two players that play the exact same position. Well, here's Cooper Flagg ball handling in summer league, playing as a point guard essentially, and PJ Washington is very much a part of next year's plan. So I just don't know how you make a trade like that in general, let alone one that includes a future Hall of Famer like LeBron James.
Yeah, so good points all. I did, as much as this has mostly worked out for the Mavs, I had to roll my eyes at Nico Harrison in the press conference. I don't know if it was immediately after the lottery or a little later when he said, oh, you know, now, or maybe it was the Cooper Flagg introductory press conference when he said, now you guys see the vision.
It was.
Okay,
now
Nico.
Now you see the vision.
Yeah, you saw that all along. If only we could all have the foresight of Nico Harrison to know that the Mavs were going to win the lottery from outside the top 5% odds. What? Well, outside the top 10% odds, right?
Nate, only bested by fortune favors the Bulls,
yes,
which he did say in his post-draft press conference. And I can tell you, having sat in the second row, I think far off to the right side, you heard a couple chuckles in the media room when he said that. Of course, it was my first time face-to-face with the infamous GM, so I wanted to be on my best behavior. But my goodness, it was quite the quote, and he's only tried to top it with that other one. So It'll be interesting, but it's juicy nonetheless. Great gossip, at least right now.
Yeah, just for the press conferences at this point, want to see the Mavs win the championship this year, so Nico can walk in with a beer in one hand, a cigar in the other, and tell the media exactly what's on his mind.
It'd be nice to see him loosen up a little bit. I think one of the other things that people maybe could have picked up on if they had seen the entire press conference, but some of the things he said specifically about Cooper Flagg and his relationship with coaches and former players and former teammates, quote for quote, said the exact same line at the introductory press conference. So I imagine there's a lot of prep. He has his lines always prepared. And Nico Harrison, for somebody who really doesn't love to talk, it seems, he's definitely keeps it within a lane. To see him loosen up, maybe have one or too many cocktails after a big celebration, it would be a pleasure and quite interesting to listen to him talk.
Well, always a pleasure to have you on these airwaves, sir. Appreciate you taking the time. Enjoy Saturday, and we'll see you back in St. Louis soon.
Always appreciate it, Nate. We'll talk to you guys soon, all right?
All righty. Daniel Esteve joining us, former Fox 2 reporter now at CW33 in Dallas. You can follow him everywhere at Daniel J. Esteve to get all of your Dallas insights and maybe a few lingering St. Louis City thoughts as well. Derek Gould will be with us to talk Cardinals after the break on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line continues on KMOX. Nate Gatter with you in for Matt Pauly, joined now by St. Louis Cardinals beat writer Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can follow him on Twitter at DGould. You can read all of his work on STL Today. Derek, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your All-Star break to visit with us.
You bet. Hope things are well back there in St. Louis.
We are doing our best. Another hot one today, but you know what? We're having a fun time anyway. One of the themes of our Redbird Rush Hour earlier when I was talking to Kevin Wheeler was kind of the transition that's going on right now, right? A transitional year. This is a transitional period in the year around the deadline, and then the transition that is coming this offseason of Chaim Bloom taking over baseball operations for John Mozeliak. In that spirit, I think one of the things people have been wondering is how that balance of power is at the deadline right now, and how much input, assuming that John Mozeliak still has the final word as acting president still, how much input Chaim Bloom gets, knowing that he's going to be the one who mostly deals with the consequences of whatever moves the Cardinals make.
Yeah, I think you put it well right there. I mean, if there are consequences of the move that spill over into next year and beyond, then, you know, it's going to involve Chaim Bloom's influence, right? I mean, Mozeliak has been pretty clear about what he wants Mozeliak's been pretty clear about, I wanted to make sure they weren't calling my name. Mozeliak's been pretty clear about what they want to do as far as roster wise, as far as the handover, about everything that he wants in place when Chaim takes over. And, you know, he's talked about it being a clean slate. That obviously isn't going to be the case, but he wants to at least give them, you know, the information that they have kind of cleared this space for all this playing time. And all under that umbrella would also go these trades. If they're going to trade from the future, then that's Chaim's future. If they're going to trade to add to the future, then that's Chaim's future. Both of them, Mozeliak's talked about it. You know, Chaim isn't as, publicly out there talking and everything out of respect for Mo at this point. But, they've all kind of discussed that, this is a team, they work together, and they get input from all categories before making a decision. And Mozeliak has said, his job is to lead baseball operations until it's not. So does that give him the final say? I mean, not really, because ownership always has the final say. That's really the crux of it, right? And they've always had sort of a collaborative work going. This is just an additional voice within that collaborative work. And maybe Chaim has a bit more way on that collaborative work, because it's his future, if that's the case. If it's his future that's in play, then he would be part of that conversation.
Derek Gould is with us, lead Cardinals writer at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Derek, how much do you think the Cardinals have their posture and sort of their mindset for the trade deadline set at this point, as opposed to how much is going to depend on the 13 games they have to play before the deadline?
It's a great question. You don't want to make such small sample size decisions, and yet you could really see how the 13 days ahead here could at least nudge them in one direction or the other, or maybe more towards an extreme, which, you know, they just haven't really had the posture of here. They haven't really looked like a seller or a buyer, and this will come as no surprise to folks who follow them for a long time, fans or media. You know, they're like, well, how can they do a little bit of both? They don't want to go all in. They're not a team that really goes like, all right, well, we're just going to spend the future that we were just talking about, the one that we advertised, the one that they're saying this, that, you know, they advertise it all season that they were going to give space to the young players. And, you know, so why on, you know, in late July would they bail on that approach after they said, you know, we're advertising this to our fans that this is going to be the reset or transition year. But they could say, well, this team is better. So how do you outfit it with help without the cost of the future? And that's when you see a team make moves like they did last year, where they trade from depth. They trade from a spot where they weren't sure what they were going to get from Tommy Edman to get something that they need that also would help them in the year to follow, they hoped, in Eric Fetty. They kind of straddle the line a little bit, which has really been their method of operation for a long time now, is just kind of running within the bell curve as opposed to going to the tails of it.
With that in mind, that they might not be squarely in the bucket of buyer or seller, I wonder if it makes it a little more difficult to pin down guys who are likely to move, if at all. I mean, obviously, if you're a seller, the expiring relievers are always the first guys you look at. Ryan Helsley, Phil Maton, mm-hmm. Steven Matz. I wonder if, and obviously, you know, if they could get something for Eric Fetty, they'd probably look into that, considering that he might lose his rotation spot anyway. But considering that they might be straddling this line a little bit more, does that actually broaden the potential pool of players who could be in discussions? I mean, locally, there's been this Lars Nootbaar speculation now bubbling up. I think that's more talk than reporting, but still, does it broaden that player pool?
It does. It does indeed. Yeah. And you start looking for spots where they have, you know, a bunch of players stacked up, or they feel like, okay, we've got an answer on this guy. Absolutely. I mean, if they could move Eric Fetty, they would definitely have that discussion. They've been open to it. And then they clear a spot, which is what they want to do for Michael McGreevy, right? Well, could they do that by acquiring something that helps them down the road, alleviating some salary, all of that? That is obviously very, very much agreeable. But it also allows them to look at, like, okay, what moves do you make that do add what they don't have in the system? Like, is there a play for a starting pitcher who they just don't have in the system, who could be around for another year, another 2 years? And do they feel that that would help them in a window to contend that would be, as we began the conversation, part of Heim's early years, right? And what's the pressure point or the cost point to pull that off? Because that would be a little bit different, right? That would be a prospect, but do they have a prospect in place or a position player in a place of depth where they can make that move? Absolutely. It opens all that up. It also helps, like, set the price, right? Like, if a team is going to come after Ryan Helsley, Cardinals know what the asking price, where it starts. Because he's an all-star closer. He obviously won the Closer of the Year award in the National League last year. He's a strong closer. He's exactly the kind of reliever that a team like the Phillies is looking for and some other teams, right? But he's also one that where the Cardinals could go, yeah, we're going to give him a qualifying offer at the end of the year. Worst case, we secure a draft pick, you know, or he accepts it because he wants to stay with the Cardinals, which Ryan has been pretty candid about that he'd like to stick around. So you either then have the same situation next year, but then he doesn't have a qualifying offer attached to him, or you get the draft pick in response. So any trade is going to start there, right? It's got to outdo the compensation draft pick at the very least to get him. So you kind of start seeing, because of that, because of where they are, because of what they're looking at, because they can kind of, you know, kind of play both sides of it, you start to understand, like, even what their asking price could be for certain players.
Yeah, obviously the trade deadline is going to dominate conversations over these next couple of weeks, but just to give you a brief reprieve from that, is there anything else that's flying under the radar because the focus is going to be on the deadline of guys you are watching or narratives that you're keeping an eye on for this last third or so of the season that you really want to keep an eye on for how it could affect next year and beyond?
I mean, Michael McGreevy's one, right? How many starts does he get in the second half? I guess you could break it down that way. How many starts does Michael McGreevy have in the second half? What does he do with them? And, you know, does that position him like they want for him to be part of the rotation next year? And then the other question, how many starts does Jordan Walker get? Where is Jordan Walker in the equation? He's down in Double A. He's working on his swing. The clock is ticking on how long he can stay there because he's on a rehab assignment. I don't really think the Cardinals have an appetite for optioning him from the majors back to Double A. He's already a guy who is running out of options, to be candid, and that's a factor. Not within this calendar year, but, you know, within his career, he's running out of options. And so you have this situation where, like, has he maximized this quote-unquote runway and playing time in the same way that Alec Boston has? Not at all. And so do they today have more information about who he is, what kind of player he is, and what role he has in their future, you know, as they wanted to? No, not at all. They don't. Do they have much more than they had in March? Do they have much more than they had in August 2024? Not really. So I think that's all part of it. I think those are some of the underlying things, and everything can trace back to the trade deadline because that's where we're at and that's where people will go with the conversation. But I think there's really some compelling things too about how you mentioned the next 13 days, not just for the trade deadline, but just for the Cardinals in general. How do they take advantage of that schedule with their style of play? Do they get some health back? What does Nolan Arenado provide? What does Lars Nootbaar provide? And do they start playing like they were in May? Because if they start playing like they did in May, they survived June, and that's to be complimented. That puts them back into the race pretty strongly, and it could happen in the 13 days.
Well, Derek, I could talk to you all evening long, but you got a flight to catch, and we want to make sure that you make it. So thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us, and we look forward to talking again soon.
You bet. They are not shy here about shouting at us. Holy cow. Sorry about that. Nice little ambient noise, as they call it.
But, yeah. Derek Gould reporting live from Hartfield Jackson for KMOX.
No kidding. They are serious about us lining up. For sure.
Well, you don't get in trouble on our behalf. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Derek Gould visiting with us, lead Cardinals writer at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can follow him on Twitter at DGould. We didn't get to talk about the labor discussions, but that'll be reserved for a future conversation. The good news is that's going to be bubbling under the surface, maybe at times bubbling up to the surface and then dipping back below for the next 18 months or so in some form or fashion. And so we'll have plenty of time to get to that. One more break in this hour. We'll get into our second hour guest as well. MLB draft conversation with Jonathan Mayo, golf talk with Dan Reardon on the eve of the Open Championship, and we'll visit with president of the St. Louis Browns Historical Society, Ed Wheatley, as well about what's going on with them. Some final Cardinals thoughts when we return on KMOX. Nearing the halfway point of Gray Bar Sports Open Line this evening, Nate Gatter with you filling in for Matt Pauley. I'll be back tomorrow. Matt will return on Friday. Get those final thoughts probably for this evening on the Cardinals and that trade deadline situation. We conducted a Twitter poll, very scientific, yesterday, and 660-odd people voted, and the options were sell, buy, don't know yet on how they wanted the Cardinals to approach the deadline. Depending on exactly what time in the poll, roughly 70% said sell. And the remaining 30% was split up. I think it was, it finished around 18% by 12%. Not sure yet, something like that. But the other 30% was split up on the other two options. I'm a little surprised that people are that sure, especially because if the Cardinals play well in the next 2 weeks and are in a wild card spot and trade pieces that have value, most likely Helsley, Maton, and Mats, and that hurts them, which it will, for the remainder of this year. I don't know that the average Cardinals fan is reacting too well to that, just based on what I know about the folks who sometimes call in to talk about the Cardinals here and the folks whose tweets we receive. I think there have to be a decent number of people in the 70%. I mean, that's what, 70% of 660. That's quite a significant number of people. That's a, mm-hmm. what, 450 or so people?
It's around that margin.
Who are voting to sell. A significant number of those 450 or 400 or whatever it is have to be likely to get upset if it does hurt the team the remainder of this year and be in the camp of people who are saying that they're not going back to Busch Stadium because of XYZ, whatever reason, which is very popular to say right now. So I don't think you're wrong necessarily if you think sell, although one of the things we talked about during the Redbird Rush Hour with Kevin Wheeler that you can go back and hear on the free Odyssey app is that Ryan Helsley does have a qualifying offer attached to him, and that came up in our chat just a moment ago with Derek Gould as well, that the Cardinals, at the very least, wouldn't take anything that's less valuable to them than the draft, the competitive balance draft pick they would get, effectively like a second-round pick, that they would get out of Ryan Helsley if he were to reject a qualifying offer and sign elsewhere in the offseason, assuming the Cardinals kept him all the way to the end. Or he takes the qualifying offer and the Cardinals keep him for a year on $20-ish million, which I think would be pretty agreeable to them, considering there's not a lot of risk in that deal. The Cardinals have relatively low payroll for the moment, so paying him, even if you're slightly overpaying him for what he's worth on a particular year, you're kind of getting that back in the minimal risk. I mentioned what camp people might be in, and so I think that means I have to bring in John Camp, who's standing by producing. John, what camp are you in?
I think I'm leaning towards sell a little bit, but it's probably in the I don't know, if I had to guess, because even if you go on and, let's say, win 10 of the next 13 before the deadline, who knows what the Brewers are going to do. They've been red hot.
Seven in a row. The Cubs
look like they're probably not going to slow down. You could definitely be in a wild card spot, but I just don't feel like you're going to be a big buyer, which is what some fans want you to be, or a big seller.
Because the division is probably not happening, just because, not because the deficit is so big, but just because the Cubs have proven themselves to be a quality team, and then you have to deal with the Brewers also, so you have to pass two teams, and that's just hard. It's not out of the question, but I think that would be tough. Wild card is definitely doable, even with the exact roster that they have.
You got to beat San Diego first, though.
It just doesn't really fire me up. You know, the idea of, oh, maybe we could get the third wild card.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not sure I'm giving anything up for that.
It doesn't scream excitement.
Right. You could argue that keeping Ryan Helsley isn't giving a whole lot up, depending on what the market is. And, you know, the Cardinals know better than we do what the market is for him. And if it's not that hot, if it's not as hot as it would have been, say, in the offseason, which it wouldn't be quite as hot as it would have been in the offseason, maybe they say, we're not giving up much because, worst case, we get a draft pick and we get to keep Ryan for the rest of the year and use him to push toward the playoffs, which would do something to restore a little bit of how the fan base feels, to, as Kevin Wheeler pointed out, make a little bit of money on just playoff TV and gate revenue. Yep. Those are not insignificant things. I think I'm in that boat as well of probably sell, but not quite sure yet. I'm almost fearful that the Cardinals win 10 of their 13 between now and the deadline, because that is going to create...
And then you really won't know what to do.
Yeah, it's going to create a mess. The news is next, second hour on the other side. Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.